You've crushed it. You've made millions. But let us ask you something. If you stop working today, how long would it all last? For most people, that answer, it's not great.
Right now, everything you have built, your house, your car, the vacations you love, relies on you. If you stop, the money stops.
That's exactly why we created a community for people just like you. No fluff, no hustle or energy, just real self-made millionaires helping each other create wealth that actually lasts.
Ready to build a legacy? Join us now at join.builtbeyondme.com and take the first step towards lasting wealth.
Imagine this, no more grinding for another 10, 15, or 20 years just to keep everything afloat. What if your wealth could start working harder than you do?
In our community, we'll show you how to invest in income-producing assets like multifamily properties and build-to-rent developments. No messy tenant management, no complicated learning curve, just real scalable wealth.
It's not about making millions anymore. It's about keeping it, growing it, and passing wealth beyond you.
Don't just make millions, make them last. Build a future, build freedom. Join our community now at join.wealthbeyondme.com. And that is join.wealthbeyondme.com.
Today, we're going to talk about the profit and loss statement. The single most important tool for evaluating whether a property is a gold mine or a financial sinkhole. And here's the thing, most people overcomplicate this, but with a few small tweaks in how you read a P&L, you can instantly spot hidden risks, catch red flags, and make smarter investment decisions. So in this video, I'm going to break down the biggest mistakes in the P&L that investors make. And once you hear them, I guarantee you'll no longer look at financial statement the same way ever again. By the way, I'm Paul McKinney, the other half of the Kitty Sisters. And over the past 6 years, we've built a $300 million multifamily portfolio. And we've done this all day long. And this is all we look at. So let's dive in.
Hello, I'm Pommy.
And I'm Nancy.
Together, we make the Kitty Sisters. We're apartment syndicators, entrepreneurs, and educators with big dreams and a $300 million multifamily apartment portfolio.
We're into helping successful entrepreneurs and founders who have a passion for real estate and $100K to $5 million to invest, all aiming to turn their business profits into a lasting legacy through income-producing asset investment.
This is Cashflow Multipliers, a podcast dedicated to your financial freedom and the lifestyle you deserve.
So obviously, first off, let's look at why does a P&L matter? And obviously, when you look at a financial statement, that's like one of the three things that they give you, right? Sometimes they'll give you the budget and the cash flow statement and the P&L, the profit and loss statement. A lot of times when we look at the P&L, we look at what's listed on the P&L. But one of the more important things is we need to also look for what's missing from it. That may be even actually a bit more important. And later on, I'll break down exactly why the hidden information or the missing information could make or break the deal. Let me tell you a little bit about reading a P&L. Isn't just about the numbers listed on the page. I want to be clear on that. It's part science, but it's also part art. And that's where experience and understanding of the story behind the P&L really, really becomes an important factor in understanding this. So the moment you understand what's really happening behind those numbers, you'll gain a huge advantage over other investors. For active investors, this means that you're going to win more deals. For passive investors, it means that you'll invest more confidently. So to set the table, let's start with a very basic point. What is a P&L and why should you care about it? So imagine running a lemonade stand. A P&L is like your money report. It tells you how much money you're making from selling lemonade. It also tells you how much you spent. Things like how much the lemon costs, how much you put in sugar, how much you put in the cups into buying those things, right? So at the end of the day, you either made money or you lost money. So a P&L does exactly that on rental properties or any other business for that matter. It's a financial report card that shows how much money came into the business and how much money went out during a certain period of time, usually over the last 12 months. And this is why it's called the trailing 12 statement or T12. And sometimes you can short truncate that to trailing 6 or T6, or you can go T3 or even T1 in some instances. For analysis of a property, you want to see the overall broad trend. So if you look back in the last 12 months, for instance, and some of the important metrics for income is dropping month by month precipitously, then you can say, hey, there's something going on there and you need to dig in further. It's not necessarily a cross like, no, don't do this deal, but you have to investigate to see what's behind there. I always tell our people in our community and I always tell people that like, hey, when you're looking at these numbers, don't look at them as like, hey, this is something I need to run away from immediately. Because behind those numbers, there may be a story. And really, in any investment, there's a story behind it. And if the story makes sense, then you can tackle, speaking of football, Super Bowl Sunday, tackle those issues head on. So don't just immediately run away from the property, but recognize that those are something you have to investigate further. Why does this matter? So if you're running the property, it tells you how much money you're making, or it's telling you that you're actually burning a lot of cash. And you can see that really clearly. So you're investing in a property. It helps you have a good idea if this is a good deal or it's a fancy pitch. A lot of time investors, what I've noticed is they're not looking into the financials. They're not understanding. They're listening to the pitch that's being provided without seeing if their pitch matches the financial reality of these properties. So the key lesson here is never just take the seller or the general partner's word for it. Look at the actual numbers. Look at behind the hood and see what it actually is saying. Okay, guys, so now that you understand what is a P&L, understanding that is one thing, but it means nothing if you don't know the concept behind them. It's like being a race car driver who's sitting in the car, the race car, but actually he doesn't know how to drive or she doesn't know how to drive. So it'd be pointless, right? It'll be just letters on a piece of paper. One of the stories that came to mind just right now is I had a friend who was doing a PhD in electrical engineering. And I was like, oh, cool. I want to read your paper. He handed me the paper. The words were in English. I can read the actual words, but I have no idea what the sentences meant. That was how niche that field was. These concepts just blew my mind. And a lot of times, like when you listen to people talk about some software topics, it also blows my mind. So it's like, just because you can read the letters and just because you can read the numbers on a financial statement, if you don't understand how that play together, what's the concept behind it, it's not going to make any sense to you. Okay, so now that you understand all that, let's talk about a really important accounting concept that we need to go over from the get-go. And this is two type of ways that properties or the financials is the accounting method they're using. So the first one is what they call the cash basis or cash method. So imagine you're running a dog walking business. Cash basis means that you count the money only when the client actually pays you. So you get paid, you walk Fluffy for 2 hours and you get paid, I don't know, $50, maybe $100 in NYC. So you get $100 for walking Fluffy for an hour or two. You got that money on hand. So that's cash basis because you actually got the cash in your hands. So the second method that is used in accounting is called accrual method. So this method means that you actually count the money probably for the entire week of walking Fluffy, even if you haven't walked Fluffy the entire time yet. So it's Sunday, you're like, okay, I'm going to walk Fluffy Monday through Friday. At each time I walk, I get $100. So 5 days, I'm going to get $500. So you already accounted for that money, even though it hasn't been paid to you in cash yet. Hopefully that makes sense. If it makes sense, let me know in the comments or give me a thumbs up on that. Okay. So for multifamily investing, what we want, and this is the ideal situation, it doesn't happen all the time, but ideally, this is how you'd like the financials to be provided to you. You want the income to be on a cash basis. So this is going to be a mix. It's a hybrid of cash and accrual. So you want the income to be on a cash basis. So you know exactly how much rent was collected, not what's possible to be collected. And on the expense side, you want it to be accrual. So you see the full financial picture of all the expenses that will be billed to you, not just what you've paid. If you are able, ideally, to have this picture, both of these, you're going to really be able to see the health of this property. Now, the caveat here is that some property management company do not do accounting in one way or the other. Some are flexible. We've had instances where some property management companies' software doesn't account for this. So we have to do some internal gymnastic with our Excel skills to make sure that the number is quite close to this as possible. It may not be perfect. Some idea would be you would ask them, okay, give me the billable for the month and then give me the collection from the last bill period to this bill period, but also give me the collection within this month. The reason you have to have both is sometimes people are paying for, maybe someone's late on their payment, so they paid for last month's rent. For instance, they paid for January's rent, but they paid it in February. So it looks like February, you may get double pay. So it looks like your income's going up, but it's really to pay for what happened last month. So that's why when you look at financials, you don't really want to look at a T1 because it doesn't compensate for that kind of delay in payments or delay in income that's necessary. That's why when you're looking at these, you want a broader picture. So like I said, this really gives you a real health check of the property if you're able to do the income on a cash basis and the expenses on the accrual basis, which again, is called a mixed message. Again, simply the rule of thumb is, if possible, always ask for income on a cash basis so you can see what's actually collected, and always ask for expenses on accrual so you see what's really owed, not just what's paid. The reason this matters is because income on accrual will only show you what's been billed, not actually paid. And the number will look way better than what is collected. This happens a lot on C-class properties. A-class properties, A-plus class properties, we see a significant difference. And as you guys know, we started this business in the C-class, meaning properties built in the 70s or 80s and serving blue-collar workers or a lot of people who are working retail jobs, etc. So in that market, what we notice, it may take almost entire months to collect possibly close to 96 to 98% of the total billable. So at the beginning of the month, you obviously send out bills and you expect payment maybe by the 5th or the 8th, depending on the term you have with your tenants to not be late, right? So on C-class properties, what I've noticed is like it may be end of February 28th, before we get 90%+ collected. It takes them that long just to pay the bill. Now, with A-class properties, the collections, 98-99% of all collections comes in within the first 3-4 days. And the other cool thing that's happening right now that can help if you're looking to operate properties, if you're looking to get multifamily as an operator like us, or even if you're looking to invest. And the cool thing that's happening recently is like there's programs that are almost like a credit card that's built specifically for rent. There's one brand that's really ingenious. It's called Built, B-I-L-T. It's like a credit card. So the tenant pays Built. Built pays us. So to us, we get paid on time and then Built collects money from the tenant over a period of time. And they get incentivized with almost like a Visa or credit card or MasterCard mileage. So they get encouraged to actually pay on time. So there's little ways to get people to pay on time, but it doesn't happen all the time, right? And that's why in collections, if we're collecting and we're only seeing the accrual basis, it's a beautiful picture, but it may not make sense. It may not match reality. On the expense side, you may have a ballooning payment, but you've only paid a small amount of it, and therefore your number looks amazing. And that's kind of like a way that manipulation of financial statements can happen. That's why when you're looking at these, like I said earlier, it's part science, but it's also a lot of art because you have to be able to see between the lines. As I said, so you can see, right, there's a little bit of a problem that happens if income's on an accrual basis and expenses on a cash basis. One other thing, like I said, it will make, if you have income on accrual and expenses on cash, it definitely will make the property look more healthier, richer, per se, because there are some of these costs that are being hidden. And that's why I always check under the hood for these things. Like I said, one of the biggest caveats is some of this may not be available. And when you're investing in a deal as an LP, typically you'll see the entire full financial statement and we'll break down what that looks like. Unfortunately, when you're buying a property, a lot of time they only show you up to the NOI line because they just want to, they don't think that the part that's below the line, which we're going to go over, matters, but it technically probably does matter. It doesn't matter if you're buying the property and the assumptions are correct, but it just speaks to the health of the property. So that's probably why they don't show you. But if you're an investor in it, always check out the entire thing. So now for the rest of the video, I'm going to show you how to read a P&L in just a few minutes. So it's going to take longer because I'm explaining to you, but if you look at this, after looking through a whole bunch of these, you're going to have more experience. Guys, 6 years ago when we started in multifamily, we had no idea how to read any of these things. It looked like gibberish to us. But over time, after reading tons and tons of these, it becomes easier. And it's like anything else. The more frequently you look at something, the easier you're going to be able to understand. So my recommendation, if you're getting started either as an active investor or a passive investor, start out by getting some of these P&L, get a hold of some of them and start reading through them so that you at least start recognizing some of the patterns and the words, even if you don't actually know the assumptions behind them yet. Okay, so that's something that you should look out for. Now, like I said earlier, like the way you look at the P&L, imagine Neo. This is kind of like a old school for a lot of youngster out there who may have not seen the Matrix. So it's almost like Neo reading, being able to read that screen and looking at it and see like a whole cityscape with people walking in it, right? And that's exactly what a financial statement looks like. To the untrained, it looks like gibberish numbers on a piece of paper. But to the trained eye, you can really see what are they telling you about this property? And there's so many times that things comes up that becomes red flags. Like I mentioned earlier, sometimes it's things that you can't see. And we'll go over that real quickly. So I'll go over that in the part that makes sense, just to make sure that doesn't get confusing for you guys. The other part is like, I talk about what's missing. Now, as you know, sometimes people forget to add certain expenses to your personal budget. The same thing can happen where the seller, intentionally or not, can slightly tweak their P&L to make their property look more profitable and to make their property look more attractive to buyers. And this could be by reducing how the expenses are interpreted, or again, how the income is interpreted. So when you're investing, the first super simple question is like, can I have the financial statements? And if you're looking at the financial statement, ask them, is this on an accrual basis or a cash basis? Okay, so now let's break down. I'm going to go from top down on the financial statement, okay? So the first thing, first section is on top, it's the money coming in, which is basically the first one is market rent. Another term for this is total gross revenue or GRS or something like that. But basically, it's like total possible rent. If you're renting each unit for the maximum, your target price, a full out. So for instance, if you want to charge $1,000 per unit and you have 100 unit, that means that that property, you're charging $10,000 per month and you have 100% occupancy. But most instances, you're not going to have 100%. So that number would drop a little bit. So market rent is the first one. The second one that's important, and the term is sort of confusing, and I don't know why they call it this, but loss to lease. So you'll see like right after gross potential rent, the next, that's what it's called, gross potential rent. So the next one right below that is loss to lease, L-O-S-S to lease, L-E-A-S-E. So that's the difference between the market rent, which is the targeted rent number that we want to charge, and what the tenants are actually paying. It's like we're a new pizza shop in town, and we write down on the board like suggested price, or not even suggested price, this is our price, $12 per slice or something, or per pizza. And then we're actually charging just 10. So there's a difference, there's a delta or a difference between what's the price listed on their board and what we're actually charging people. The next item that's on the financial statement for properties typically is vacancy loss. So vacancy loss simply means that money lost to empty units, or not physically empty units, but basically people who are lawfully or not lawfully in your occupying your unit, but they're not paying rent. So that's a vacancy loss. The next line item that comes into play is called other income. So a lot of people new to multifamily, they think that the only way we get income is through renting the units, which of course is the bulk of the income. But there's a whole bunch of really smart ways to also add on additional income in a way that isn't just burdening the tenants. It's not burdening them, but it's actually lessening their load. We've done videos about how to increase other income, how to increase revenue on properties without actually increasing rent. So go check that out. Essentially, these things can be pet rent fees, parking fees, late fees, internet fees, all those things that essentially they're already using. And now we're just redirecting it towards us instead of them paying for other vendors. Okay, so now that's the income side. The once that's totaled up, that's called operating income. Okay, so now we're going to go to the operating expenses. This is basically money going out. So operating expenses are recurring expenses that we can expect month after month. Some of the most common expenses, operating expenses, would be stuff like payroll taxes, insurance, property taxes, marketing costs, contract services, payroll. So contract services would be like landscaping, pest control, security, etc. Payroll would be staff salaries, leasing agents, maintenance staff. It may also include things like healthcare contributions, etc. The other item that's common, and if it doesn't have it, it'll be very weird, is repair and maintenance. Sometimes repair is separate from maintenance, but essentially that. And the other one is turnover. So sometimes repair and maintenance, R&M, is one line item, and another line item is called turnover, but sometimes they also mush it together. So you have to be able to see, okay, are they combining everything? Because then you can get context to if this is high or low cost. So turnover cost means if a tenant moves out, you have to go in, you may have to clean the carpet, you may have to repaint the walls, or if that's left in a bad condition, it's a lot more work in that. So that's turnover cost. Repair and maintenance would be like the toilet plugged up and we have to go and bring in the plumber to fix it, something like that. So some sellers, recognizing these items is important because some sellers hide these expenses to make the property look more profitable. So if some of these expenses look too low, then that may be a red flag. And also it may mean that the property may need to be repaired sooner than later. A good rule of thumb, it's not always perfect, is that the expense of the property should be around 50% of the total income. So if it's way higher or way lower, that's a red flag you need to check out. So once you have the net total income or total operating income, you subtract that against the operating expenses and you get what we call net operating income. This is the most important metric inside of multifamily. Again, the formula is NOI equals total revenue or operating income subtract operating expenses. So why is this so critical? So NOI determines the property's value. So the higher the NOI number, the more value the property is. The formula, I'm going to do a little bit of algebra. We're going to reverse everything. So NOI equals total income divided by operating expense, right? In order to calculate the value, you flip things around a little bit. Algebra. So you take the NOI, you subtract by the cap rate, and you get the income. All right, sorry, you get the value of the property. Okay, super simple math. We're going to take out your calculator if you can, if you have a calculator. So take out your calculator, and we're going to do this math together real quickly. If the property's value or NOI, if the property's NOI increased by $100,000 because you increased income or you were able to reduce expenses, $100,000, and your cap rate, just assume the cap rate is 5% for now. Type in 100,000 into your calculator, divided by 5%, press equal. So I'll do the math. I'll tell you the math again, okay? 100,000, which is $100,000 in increase in NOI, divided by 5%, press the equal sign, and you'll see that you raise the property's value by $2 million. So the other way of looking at this is for every dollar increase you do to the property, you get back about $16 to $20 in value add. And that's a different way of interpreting the same exact number. So anywhere, and cap rate is oscillating. It's a scale. The good properties will have a lower cap rate, like a golf game. Not so amazing properties will have a higher cap rate. It basically determines how little, the theory behind that is that you're willing to pay more for a really, really good property, even you'll take a little bit less profit because you de-risk it. It's a safer investment versus buying a really sketchy deal and they're giving you like a really great return, but you're like, you're not sure if you're buying a lemon. Okay. So that's net operating income. That's great. Net operating income is amazing. And especially as an investor or an operator, you want your NOI to be as high as possible. And when you're selling, that's where you're going to put a lot of emphasis. You're going to talk, you and your brokers are going to talk to the cow comes home, how amazing the NOI is, which is no small feat. We've, across our entire portfolio, we've seen our NOI matching our budget or exceeding it, which is exceptional. Now, where you need to actually look to go beyond this and go to the next step is actually what is called below the line. So it is like an accounting term. It's literally a line and ending below that. So NOI demarcates, if NOI is up here, so income, operating expenses, NOI, the line right below that, you can draw a line here, understand, that's called literally below the line. It took me so long to understand what that means. It's not the NOI, but it's still very, very important as an operator, not as much if you're buying, but as an operator, as an active, as managing the property, or if you're investing in it. So always look there. So these below the line expenses, one category of it are things that are like surprise expenses. Think of it as like you're driving a car and then one day the transmission blew and you now you have to spend thousands of dollars replacing it. That's a surprise expense. So there's a couple items that fit into below the line. So the first one is what I just explained. It's a capital expenditure, or what we call CapEx. So CapEx are one-time big ticket expenses. Imagine if you had to replace roofs or HVAC systems or repaint the entire complex. Those are one-time expenditures. You're not expecting to change roofs every single month or every year. So maybe a couple million dollars in CapEx is something that you're going to spend, but that's a one-time thing. So that's one of the item that will be classified below the line. And this is where I told you, hey, make sure you take a good look at this because some items may be questionable. If is it really a repair of the, is it really, can should we call it a repair of a unit, or is it really a CapEx item? So there's some leeway there. A lot of times, even us, like our bookkeeping team, they'll fight us and we'll say, hey, what can we put below the line? And like, you can't put that, or you can put this. So you have a little bit of a conversation. So we say, sometimes we lose, sometimes they lose, whatever. We win some, they win some. But ultimately, we want to make sure that it's correct. Okay. So the other two, the next item that goes below the line is something that stays constant. If it's a constant meaning that this item shows up, the dollar amount that you pay out in it may be or may not be constant depending on the type of loan you have. So the first thing is called, this is called debt service or simply mortgage payment. If you own a home, every month you're paying principal and interest on your home, right? That's typical on single family home that you own. That's not the case with multifamily apartments because multifamily apartments have very interesting, unique loan structures. Sometimes during out the entire course of the loan, you're only paying just the interest. And then at the end, you pay a balloon payment that covers the principal that you borrowed. And that's what they'll call interest only. There's some benefits and there's some costs. So you have to evaluate both. The benefit is, hey, you're not paying the principal because you're not holding this asset long term. So it doesn't matter. That means that if you're not paying down the principal, you're actually putting more cash flow into the investor's pockets. However, you're holding the property longer term. It may benefit you to actually start paying down the principal. One of the properties that we closed, which was a $77 million property in 2023, we bought this property with a loan assumption, which means that we took over the seller's loan, and that loan had 38 years left on it. It was principal plus interest. So every single year, we're paying not only the interest on the loan, which is at 3.49%, but we're also paying principal as well. And every single year, the graph will start going up. So if your property can still cash flow and you're paying principal down, that's a really good sign. It's guys, like if you can do both, then that means it's a really, really good property. The other thing, okay, so that's debt service. So debt service, as far as the interest rate part goes, there's fixed debt and there's variable debt. Fixed debt means that the interest rate stays constant. For our deal, 38 years left, it stays exactly the same. It won't change throughout the course of the year. It won't change in 2024. We'll still pay 3.49%. In 2030, it'll still be 2.34%. In 2035, it'll still be the same. Variable rate will fluctuate based on what they call a SOFR index, probably a 30-day average plus a spread. More on that on other videos, but just understand there's two types of interest rates. So debt service, if you're on a fixed rate that's interest only, it'll stay constant throughout the entire loan. If you're on fixed, but you're paying principal and interest, it'll change a little bit. It'll start going down slightly because you're paying a little bit of principal down every single time. So it'll come down a little bit. If you're on a variable rate loan or bridge loan or something like that, then the rate may go like this, depending on the market. Okay, so the other major item that will be below the line is what's called the ownership distribution or cash payout to investors. On said property, we're actually preparing to do the distribution on the property within this month. And how we evaluate it is exactly what we're going through right now. This exercise, we go through our income statement, we go through our expenses, we check our NOI, and then we look below the line to see, okay, how much can we actually afford to pay out? And then we work backwards and then, okay, this is, we work through the math and we decide, okay, this is the amount that we're comfortably able to pay out this distribution cycle. The thing that, like I said before, why this matters to understand what's below the line is because some operators, they may have really, really high NOI, but they also have like really big CapEx costs that's eating away at their profit. And maybe even debt service where interest rates are variable and it's very high and it's eating away at their profit. Guys, reading P&L confidently might sound easy when I'm explaining it, but making it second nature will take time and practice. I know this firsthand. I know how challenging it can be. And over the past few years, I've been focused on growing our investment firm. I've learned a lot along the way. And that's why we've actually created a community designed to help you invest with confidence. If you're unsure where to invest, what the numbers means and why does it matter, or who to trust, our community provides that resources for you to. We've packed 6 years of worth of knowledge, mistakes, and strategies and share them with our community so that if you think this is something that might help you, check it out. We have a massive waiting list, so make sure to check it out and get on there. Now that we've covered the what is a P&L dynamically, let's dive into a case study. So this is a case study of some key red flags that I observed from a T12 of a financial statement of a property, a real property, which will be left nameless. So this is a T12, or again, the past 12 months of P&L or trailing 12 of a 236 unit apartment. So one of the things I observed was that the easy way to sort of compare apples to apples with these expenses is to divide them by the number of units, because that way you can compare a 300 unit apartment versus a 200 unit apartment and see apples to apples if these numbers make sense. So payrolls is one of the numbers I looked at on this financial, on this P&L. And I thought, okay, basically per unit is about $2,080. I think the proper range right now should be anywhere between $1,700 to $1,800 per unit in payroll costs. So this is slightly higher. You may want to investigate why it's higher. Is it A-class property? Is there like an exceptional team behind it? Also, even just make sure that the property management team are not just billing a lot and they're not really doing a great job. Just make sure that it makes sense. Always check, okay, how many are full-time on site? Are they overstaffed or do they have temps who are costing more? Are they having issues hiring? All those things. And also check out if they're putting any third-party payroll expenses unbeknownst to you into this. Sometimes I see if a property is self-managed, they're going to have a higher payroll because they're paying, you know, the boss is paying himself through payroll. Always ask, like, are there ways to reduce? We have two properties that are a couple miles apart. And one of the things that we reduced was we took the, what's his job is like basically to do sort of like general cleaning up of the property. We asked that this person then like split duties between two apartments so we can split up their expenses so that you don't have to have two separate people. They're called porters. So like instead of having two porters on these two properties, which basically we're not really utilizing them 100% of the time, now we get to split that payroll across two properties. Okay, so the other one is operating expenses. Again, like I mentioned, operating expenses should be around 50% of total income. In that property that I studied, the overall operating expenses was $1.4 million, which is around $6,000 per unit. So that one's about 55% of the total income. It's a bit high, but not overly the top. So you have to make sure that you lean, this needs to be close to standard. And how you check for some of these numbers is, how I know is through experience of looking through a whole bunch of these comparison. And the tip is to put them on a spreadsheet so that you can easily compare them. This shouldn't be something you have to memorize. What I heard this morning, which was amazing, is that the human brain wants to forget as much as possible. And the reason for that is because we only have a finite amount of space to process information, and we don't need to clutter our brain with useless information. So for me, there's no point in memorizing all these data. If you can stack them into a really clean spreadsheet and just put a whole bunch of them together, then you can easily pull data like, hey, what's the average for this market? Every market's different. So how we did it was we'll take a submarket at a city level, or if it's a big city, even maybe within the geographic no more than 5 miles away. We'll put it on one spreadsheet. And so we can do analysis based on that. And we can always plug in the property we're looking at against what's the norm in the area. The red flags you guys have to look for here is any unusual expense categories, or somehow it spikes certain months. So this, if it oscillates, you can see that. Now, okay, this is the one that we could have lost $500,000 on when we were looking at a property. And this is a really, really, really important point. So on this property, we had some special intel. When we were looking through the P&L, the insurance looked really reasonably priced, but I knew that they just had a claim on the policy because they just had a hurricane come through. Now, this is because I dug deep. I didn't just rely on what's on paper. I did research as well. So I found out that recently there was a hurricane that hit. Naturally, they had a whole bunch of windows that they had to replace. It's going to cost a lot of money. Insurance aren't dumb. They're going to charge you for that. You know, like it's kind of weird. Like you pay out insurance, but then you end up paying more to cover the cost. It's sort of like you pay yourself plus gave them some extra money. So in that specific P&L, it shows the insurance being a reasonable price. I think it was around like $800 per door. But then knowing what the claim's going to be, I got an estimate from our broker, insurance broker, and the price like basically went to almost like $1,800 per door. So think about $1,800 per door versus $800. That's $1,000 difference per door. And if you do $1,000 difference per door times a 200 unit apartment, that's a crazy amount of money that now you're paying extra on. It's a staggering amount that can really break or make your deal. That's like $200,000 difference, right? So if you don't account for that properly and you don't see that and you didn't see that as a red flag, that's going to be a big problem. They gave you the numbers, but your job is to read through these numbers and actually understand them. The other thing is, are certain categories going up? How are you tracking that? You need to really pay close attention. A lot of times, like right now, the hardest thing in multifamily is really controlling operating expenses. And it's like a nonstop conversation. Even us who have with our property management company every single week, we need to control expenses. For us, income's not a problem. Our income's great on all these properties. To control the thing, we need to control our expenses. And it's happening across the board. There's inflation happening. There's There's pressure on payroll that's increasing. Labor costs is going up, all that stuff. So those are things you have to pay attention to. Okay, the other one is utilities and contract service costs. You have to check if this is in line. Utilities, let's talk about two types of utilities. The first one is it's mastered metered. Mastered meaning that the property only has one meter. And so you have to figure out how you're going to divide that cost against all the tenants who's paying for it. There's two ways of doing this. The first way is you can arbitrarily just set fixed rate. Like for one of our property before, we said electricity costs $65. Now that worked fine. And I got kind of nervous because one summer it got really, really hot. And I'm like, oh man. And I think it was during COVID. And I was like, oh, this is horrible. They're stuck in their house because the government asked them to stay indoors. And it's hot. So guess what? They're going to be spending a lot of money on electricity. And when they have a cap on how much they pay, they're going to spend. Right? So that was not fun. So that's master metered. If you're not master metered and you're individually metered, you can obviously, the tenant will pay for the utility in their unit. But there's this thing called CAM, which is common area expenses that you can also charge, because there's a certain part of the building that we all get to use, we meaning all the tenants get to use. So we get to shift some of that cost to them as well. And this is also the other, which is also when you're charging back tenants for a specific cost on the property, it's also called RUBS. So those are some of the stuff you have to pay attention to. Contract services. This is an area where you as an owner need to pay really close attention and do not just let your property management company just put whatever vendors they want. Always get multiple bids. Make sure validate against other properties that will help you just understand if this cost is in line. Expenses are always something we expect to increase. Right. When we model financial model our business plan for every property we purchase, we put at least 3%. And in some cases, we actually put more. The other stuff that to look out for is like repair and maintenance, I had mentioned before. This is something important because what we want as much as possible is to have the team on site, our property management, our maintenance, our turnover person, our porter, all those people to be in charge of doing a lot of these repairs ourselves. And that's why when you hire like the maintenance guy, you want to make sure that he has the correct qualification or certification for HVAC repair, et cetera, because those are very pricey. One of the most expensive line item I notice in maintenance and repair is plumbing. Plumbing always is one of the biggest hits, especially if you're buying older properties. There will be some sort of plumbing issue. There's no way to avoid that, right? So a lot of times, like one instance, we noticed that our pipe, we kept having a guy come out and snake our pipe, our sewer line, every single month. And that cost a few $1,000s. And we said, okay, we asked our property management company, like, can we do this ourselves? Can we buy the machine and just have our guy, Eric, just do this on a monthly basis as a preemptive thing? And she's like, yeah. And guess what? That machine costs like $900. And we were being charged like $2,000 every single month for this. So sometimes like a one-time payment and just asking the right question may be just that. That's important enough to actually get that to be done correctly. The maintenance also, you know, like sometimes it could be something that balloons out of control. So what we've done is we ask our property management company that they cannot sign off on any expenses unless over like a certain dollar amount. So sometimes it's like, hey, if it's over $3,000, you need to get our sign off. Or in some properties, we would say like, you're not allowed to actually spend on anything unless we approve it. And have a tracker for each room. For example, room 101, what have you repaired? When did you repair? What's the cost? Why is this important? We've had a property that we actually sold already where the team, they charged the property management team. They were also property project managers. So every time they did something, they charge us for it. So they made like a 6% fee on their project management. So guys, guess what? They're incentivized to keep charging a higher dollar amount because they get to get a percentage of that. What ended up happening is that we had like a $3,500 budget for renovation to renovate the units, and they always went over budget. So every time a unit was someone left the apartment, instead of evaluating, is the condition good enough to charge market rent? They decide, no, we're going to renovate every single time to the max standard, even though maybe the flooring didn't need to be replaced. Maybe we just replaced the flooring and shouldn't have to replace it again. Or maybe the blinds are still fine and they chose to repair it again. That just, it's just insane. So Simple Tracker, it's not 100% foolproof, but the goal is for them to know that we're tracking them like hawks, and we're not going to let them, every time there's this kind of stuff, we're going to make sure that we actually flag in it and make sure that's an issue that will not happen all the time. Repair and maintenance is also really, really important for just satisfaction of the residents. We don't want there to be too many repair and maintenance tickets open, because that would mean issues, and especially like major ones. If there's leak or floods or something like that, that needs to be fixed immediately. We had a situation a couple years ago in our Atlanta property where the boilers broke. And it's during the winter. And so like maybe six families didn't have hot water. And we immediately said, hey, you know what? We're going to pay for your hotel. You go stay at our hotel for a week at our cost, and we're going to fix this. And that's that. And sometimes it's expensive, and you want to do right by your residents so that they actually are happy to be there. They're actually going to stay longer, reduce the turnover, and also maybe become referral for their friends. The other thing is always look for discounts. Ask the vendors, ask your property management, hey, are there any temporary discounts, or there's some sort of pricing structure, specials happening, all that stuff. And always keep anything that has guarantees and warranties so that you make sure that you actually come back and get it fixed. So always compare your CapEx expenditures to miscellaneous repairs just to make sure that it's not wrongly classified on your profit and loss statement. The other item, again, is the contract services. In the apartment example that I saw, $635 per unit was the cost of contract services, which is about $150,000 a year. The benchmark for this, depending on what's included, landscaping, pest control, security, can run anywhere between $500 to $1,000. Now, keep in mind, this is from my experience. You have to validate these numbers in your area for your specific circumstance. So in this case, in this example, contract services was fine, $365. Things to confirm when you're looking at this, if you're an operator, not really if you're an investor, are these contract services a fixed contract? How often is new contract signed? What is the lock-in period? What are some of the unnecessary contracts? We've had an issue once where we fought because we felt like the landscaping cost was like completely out of control. And the property management company was just like so stubborn, like, no, you don't understand. This is the best gardener, landscaper. I'm like, no, yeah, you can be great on your other properties. He's just not welcome on ours anymore. So all those things. Another one to look out for and to compare is marketing and advertising. If your property is fully occupied and you're spending a lot of money on marketing and advertising, you need to question why you're doing that. So if an apartment is struggling to lease up, or at least at a certain rate, of course, you're going to spend more on marketing and advertising. And marketing and advertising could include things like Facebook ads, sponsorship posts on apartments.com, etc. And it could also include things like corporate outreach, that you have a team that you go out to different corporations around your area, and then you put advertising out there that, hey, we have a great property, come over, check it out, etc. Again, look at the lease conversion rate here to see if marketing cost is high and if the property still has vacancy, or vice versa, if it's still high and there's no vacancy. Either way, it's high, it may not be working. Okay, guys. So final warnings and red flags to just watch out for. The first one, again, is manipulated financials. If the seller inflates income and hides expenses, the P&L won't reflect reality. Another one is unrealistic low expenses. If payroll or repair seems way too low, then you're going to have to expect that there's going to be a massive spike after the purchase. A lot of these red flags isn't a stop what you're doing and drop and roll. It means you have to then assume if the risks is still worth it to purchase the property. If you know that the expenses are unrealistic low, then you may, in your financial analysis, assume the correct kind of expense model based on your experience so that, okay, now you know, right? This is how much it costs. You already penciled it in. The other one is watch out for mom and pop accounting. Small landlords, they often don't track expenses very well. So the numbers will definitely be inaccurate. That's like the positive or like the optimistic way of viewing it. The pessimistic way, and fortunately we haven't experienced this, but our colleagues, our friends have, is people who blatantly manipulate their financial statements. There's instances where they've even cooked the books where people think that their occupancy is 70% and it turns out it's 50%, or they stuff their property with basically people who not pay more than a month or two, but while we're under contract, it looks like they're fully occupied. Some of the solutions is compare the P&L to the market norms, ask brokers, check similar properties, also validate the information with the property management company you plan on working with in that market, in that property, that have localized knowledge of the market. They're going to be able to tell you, no problem, this is too expensive. Yeah, that's in line. I think a lot of time, like how we do it is we know this is what their numbers are and it's fine. It's sort of like a starting point, but we look at what we expect the expenses to be. And then we validate that with the property management company that will be doing the managing of that property. So they can tell us, you know, Pommy, I agree with your numbers. I don't agree with your numbers, et cetera. Review other reportings that they provide. Maybe they provide other property management reports. Maybe they provide other rent rolls. Rent rolls are basically a list of rents from each of the tenants, and it gives you like how much has been paid, how much they charge, and any concession, etc. So if you have that kind of comparison, it's also very, very helpful. If the numbers don't add up ultimately, don't be afraid to just walk away. I know sometimes we're fixated on deals. We spend so much time and effort looking through it, but don't hold on to something that's going to burn you. Walk away, because there's going to be plenty of fish in the sea for you to actually go after. I saw this a lot, and if you know how to P&L correctly, you can spot these hidden risks before you buy, and that's how you can make millions of dollars instead of losing them. All right, so that's all for now. Let me know what you want to learn next. I use your comments to decide what video to create. So drop the comments and tell me the topic you want me to cover. Until then, I'll see you in the next video. Ciao for now.
We can't wait to begin this journey with you. Check us out at thekittysisters.com/podcast.